Welcome to the podcast of tomorrow, a Futurama podcast where today we are discussing season 4, episode 11, The 30% Iron Chef. I am Lindsay Wilson, joined as always by Alex Coates. Alex, how's it going?
Hello, I'm good. I nailed this prediction of it is just Iron Chef with Bender.
You really did. And I made a note to self to read you the description from last week because I remember being tickled by it. And you were extremely close, but it was like Bender receives culinary lessons from the great chef Helmut Spargel and puts his skills to the test on national television. Meanwhile, Dr. Zoidberg accidentally destroys Professor Farnsworth's ship in a bottle and pins the blame on Fry, only to be struck with remorse afterward.
Maybe the most B plot has ever felt, where it's like, yes. This like is very, it felt like an episode of Friends or Seinfeld where it's like, oh, we need like a story for Kramer to have.
Yeah. 100%. I was thinking that as I was watching, I was like, how did this merit mention in the synopsis? And that was what I was thinking last week. I was like, I don't even remember that happening.
Yeah.
So yes, very, very minor. So anyway, how's it going? How was your week?
It's good. Nothing much is going on. We canceled our MoviePass subscription because all movies are terrible these days. Yeah, it was like, do we want to see Kung Fu Panda 4 or do we never want to see a movie again? And we decided I'm never seeing a movie again.
Fair enough, honestly.
What else?
I feel like your journey with MoviePass has been going on since the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, so. I'm sure we might, you know, we might jump back in the summer or something, but yeah.
Summer blockbuster season.
Yeah, exactly. I listened to the podcast last week, or rather I scrolled to the last 50 seconds to hear if the cooing of mourning doves was at the end. And I was
like, he'll never listen. So I didn't bother to do it.
It's okay. Can you give me a bird update? Are the mourning dove nest?
Yes. So they are still there, still noisy. I did some research and discovered that mourning doves will often find a cooing perch. Uh-huh. And that is the spot where they try to attract a mate. And I thought it was very funny. It's called a cooing perch.
Yeah.
And so this one's clearly a loser because he's been out there for a really long time.
Can't find a mate. Maybe you need to make like a very cozy, candlelit cooing perch.
A romantic cooing perch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I've seen him out there though with at least, I don't know if it's the same second bird twice, but I've seen him twice with a second bird. Mm-hmm. And once they were just like sun tanning in a sun patch. And when they were just on a branch. So I don't know. Maybe he's found a friend.
Sounds like it could be happening.
Yes, they never shut up. But then my sister made a comment that was like, oh, but remember in Vancouver, all the crows? It can't be as bad as that. And I was like, you're right. That is a good point. And then the next morning, it was like every crow in the province arrived outside our bedroom window.
They followed
like,
you.
Right. This is worse. This is much worse. Yeah. And then they flew away and then you could hear the like, ooh.
One of the worst New York City apartment I ever lived in, one of the small details that I kind of forgotten about until this story was that pigeons landed on either the air conditioner or like the ledge right by our air conditioner and often had sex like right in front. It was like the window like right by the head of my bed and pigeons would just land there and
like the Discovery Channel.
Yeah, exactly.
Hilarious. That's so funny. Yeah, honestly. Yeah, not as annoying as when there were baby pigeons out there, but still a challenge. And I sent you more footage of the birds and you still were like, yes, this is extremely inoffensive.
Yeah. I sent you back the clip of Lisa from the Telltale Heart episode of her losing her mind.
The hideous heart.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought that was very apt. Very good.
Yeah, I felt it. Sometimes I like sit there. This happened yesterday in a work meeting where sometimes I sit there and it takes me like 10 seconds to think of, like, I know that there is an appropriate meme to send and I have to like sit there and enter my mind palace and find the meme. It was yesterday at work. Somebody was doing a live demo of updating their profile picture and they like went to update their picture and in their downloads folder or whatever, they had headshot and headshot_fun. And it made me think of that. I don't know if you know of this meme. It's the yearbook picture of Daniel and the cooler Daniel. But I really had to like enter the mind chamber to pull that one up.
Oh my God. Incredible. Did you share it?
I did share it. It got 6 laughing emojis
and
two sunglass emojis because the cooler Daniel is wearing sunglasses. New York City just had a earthquake, apparently. I was out. What? I was out of the apartment and was just like walking home right as it was happening, apparently. And I did not feel it at all, but everyone was talking about it.
I think it was like 2010, there was an earthquake in Ottawa, which you certainly felt. But then afterward, there was a lot of like, I survived the Ottawa earthquake. I was like, literally everyone survived this earthquake. There were no casualties.
The blizzard kill meter or death count
exactly.
Of zero.
Currently at zero. Yeah, exactly. Honestly. Anyway, Alex, what did you think of the 30% Iron Chef?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I liked the I actually liked the B plot. I liked that it was a funny Zoidberg thing that like had no stakes, but was and also was like not given enough time to become annoying. So I thought that
it
was
does
good.
Have a bit of like Hideous Heart energy as well.
Yeah, exactly. Of him just going crazy. I was kind of sad that that doesn't end with people being ambivalent. I guess I don't really remember how it ends. It ends with him trying to kill himself with a sword. That took it too far. I was hoping that he confesses and everyone being like, whatever, bro, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And
I expected
then
it to end. I couldn't remember how, but I expected it to end with him confessing and the professor being like way more mad at him than he was at Fry.
Yeah. So that was good. Main plot was fine. I liked the teacher. That whole area was fun. The accent reminded me of Werner Herzog, which reminded me of Werner Herzog talking about how Baby Yoda was heartbreakingly beautiful.
So the guy who talked about how his deep love of Here Comes Honey Boo Boo.
I don't know if I've seen that. He famously is in Parks and Rec for a couple of guest appearances.
I don't remember that. Yes, it was Werner Herzog on Conan. And he was like, it just seemed like he was too smart to be there. And then he was like, my favorite show is Here Comes Honey Boo Boo. And Conan just like died. And then he made them play the clip of that like 100 times.
Yeah, that's very good. I'm pretty sure I've talked about the clip of him saying Baby Yoda is heartbreakingly beautiful and he cried. I'm pretty sure I've talked about that before, but it's a classic.
Oh, he owns the house that April and Andy buy. That's funny.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, good. Did not know. One thing I noted during this was, so I also liked the teacher, but I also noted that like I feel like we're in a real Bender heavy era of the show where like we had the Bender's in love with the ship, and then we had the Pharaoh episode, and then we had Godfellas, and now we're having this one.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's a lot of Bender episodes.
Yeah, that's a good point. Bender is definitely not my favorite character, but I think all these episodes are pretty strong. So
yeah. No, I completely agree. I would think that like a Bender era would be not very good, but this episode was quite fun. I thought it was really funny. I don't know if the storyline was that exciting, but I thought there were a lot of really good lines, and I agree. I think the Zoidberg plot line is very funny.
I like that it's low stakes. I like that. I mean, like reality TV stuff is always a little bit fun. Like, I'm not a big food reality cooking fan, but you know, all that stuff is fun. It reminds me a little bit of the new episode that I liked that you didn't like as much of the filming the soap opera at like 2x speed.
Yeah, the Impossible Stream or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't watch any of these like Iron Chef or like Top Chef or any of those types of things, but big Bake Off fan.
Yeah, I've seen some Bake Off. Bake Off's good. I've seen like these aren't cooking shows, but I've seen like Bake Off inspired shows. Did you watch the glass blowing one on Netflix?
Yes, I did. Blown away.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think only that the first
feels
season.
Very Bake Off. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, I agree. I think my one complaint with that one is like the episodes are only 30 minutes versus Bake Off is an hour. And so you're just like, wait, who are these people?
Right. Do you have updates from Jeremy about it?
Good thing you mentioned that. Okay, so to reset the scene, last week we talked about the Leela episode and how she was a gimmicky person. And you were like, Lindsay, do you know any teams that did anything gimmicky? And I was like, I couldn't begin to answer this because I don't know anything about teams and their non-gimmicks, let alone their gimmicks. So Jeremy, helpfully, I will try to summarize because a lot of context, but he said, baseball does have a bit of a history with gimmicks. Former White Sox owner Bill Veeck. Oh, pronounced Beck. That was helpful of him.
Oh.
Since strike zones are determined by the space between a hitter's knee and chest, he ultimately decided that a little person would be the perfect hitter. And so he brought in Eddie Guidel, who literally had a fraction as his jersey number, and it was 1/8, and he was 3'6", and naturally they walked him. And that was in 1951.
Interesting.
And then Oakland A's owner Charles Finley thought that since stealing bases is valuable and contingent on speed, why not hire Olympic sprinters?
Okay, I love that.
Turns out there was more to it than speed, and they weren't actually that good.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's very disappointing. This is like in the genre of get a very large person in the net of...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, same with wrestler or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's more, the pure speed of Hurricane Herb did not translate into high base stealing success. He swiped 31 in 48 attempts, 65%. As a result, his statistical value was slightly negative.
Wow. That's surprising.
And then the last one, Eddie Faust. And he went to St. Louis and visited the manager of the New York Giants, told McGraw that a fortune teller said that he would help the Giants win the championship. And as a joke, he got a tryout and allowed him to stay because the team suddenly started winning as soon as he got there. They had a record of 36-2 that season when he was in uniform, and when he was not there, they struggled. but he wanted to pitch in a real game and had little athletic ability. And then they ultimately won the pennant. And then after they got rid of him, they never won again.
Maybe angels in the outfield could be considered a gimmick of having supernatural angels on your team.
True. Good point. He also said Hank Aaron was no joke. Beat Babe Ruth's all-time home run record despite many racist death threats from fans.
Did Jeremy have any takes on my Jeremy Lin is a gimmick take?
Yes, I said Jeremy Lin on the Knicks, I guess. So it was about basketball. I said Alex got that about right. He just kind of heated up for a while and it was a lot of fun. He played a long time after bouncing around from team to team but never again recaptured the old magic. He's still okay, though. Pretty sure he went to Harvard.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And then last thing, Hank Aaron, turns out, had an awful brother named Tommy who played, but they probably didn't want to call out his actual brother.
That's fun. Yeah.
He had a negative career value. If you've ever heard the term replacement level, he is worse than that.
Wow.
Negative 2.8 versus Hank was worth 143 wins above replacement level.
Nepo baby Tom Aaron.
Tommy Aaron, yeah. After his brother died in 1999, Hank Aaron said that he meant a lot to me. I think if he played with another ball club, he probably would have had a better career. Media was always comparing us. I'm sure by me being successful, it put a lot of pressure on him and he couldn't play to his potential.
Oh.
All right, enough context, says Jeremy.
Perfect.
Yes. So thank you for that, Jeremy. Very informative and good stuff in there. I really like the Olympic sprinters.
Yeah. I have an update, or I have, I guess, feedback from beloved ex-boss Adam. Adam was listening to the podcast in his car, probably the only person in the universe to use like the, you know, like,
oh my God, like the CarPlay.
Yeah, the built-in CarPlay. And his feedback is that we need to get on the metadata of some metadata feature that's appearing on the CarPlay is audio Lindsay Wilson and then a long series of numbers that he was nervous was like your geolocation coordinates.
It's just the Zoom file or whatever, but
okay, it's the name of the Zoom file. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's funny because so I used to have everything neatly entered into my transcription software and it was always named like Simpsons podcast season 4, episode 10.
Yeah. Oh, three. Yeah.
Yeah. And then everything all went to shit with that software. And so now it just comes up as like Lindsay, blah, 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 Alex, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So right. Yeah, it's just the Zoom file name.
Adam says to get on that metadata team.
Yes. All right. Fine. I will try to address that and see if it makes any difference.
I will say that you talking about naming the files Simpsons then and now, like, you know, 053. I will say that I have a distinct memory of being suckered into purchasing, and I suppose not suckered into, but one of the reasons why I was curious about purchasing seasons of Survivor on DVD and The Simpsons to some degree was that the episodes were like cataloged and numbered appropriately, where it was like, oh, episode 3 of Palau is like Survivor 1003. Like something about the whole numbering and cataloging really appealed to me as a child. And I was like, okay, I want to own every episode, you know?
I'm looking at the metadata and it says SO4 E10, a little of her own. This is episode number 64. Good for us. Yeah, I can't find it, so I'm assuming that no one cares, but
yeah. All right. Well, it's been acknowledged, and Adam, yeah, you have bested us. Congratulations.
Yeah. I'll work on it. Great. Okay, let's dive into the episode. So the opening caption is if accidentally watched, induce vomiting. Mm-hmm. Which seems to align with the content of the episode.
That is true. Very, probably rare for that to happen. How's your vomit streak going, Lindsay?
Probably like 11 years.
Okay, that's pretty good. Yeah, I feel like everyone is always very proud of their vomit streak, unless you're frequently vomiting. But
yeah,
I very infrequently vomit, but had a horrible neurovirus like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, I remember you being very unwell. Yes, and then Boop Corner, Alex.
Boop, there it is.
Boop Corner is like a circus performer getting his head bitten off by a lion.
Okay, good, good. This is called Toys Will Be Toys by Famous Studios from 1949. And a toy shop owner closes the store for the night and goes home. After business hours in a toy store, the merchandise comes to life and the toys enjoy a bit of musical nightlife.
Oh.
Yeah, an impromptu parade, military comes, captain of the guard falls in love with a doll. And then there's a song where they sing, "Oh, you beautiful doll." And watch for Coco the Clown and Popeye, two of our, well, really more Coco the Clown. We never really see Popeye.
Yeah, maybe, I wonder whose head was getting bitten off by a lion. Maybe it was like a toy nutcracker or something like that.
Yeah, toy soldier or something. Who knows, really? Yeah. Probably not a soldier. That would be like anti-American.
Yeah, can't be showing that in our propaganda films.
Indeed, especially in 1949. So the episode opens up and Bender is watching Good Morning Earth, which is our favorite television program with Morbo and Linda. And it's like a cooking segment with Elzar.
Yes, I do love kind of like cozy Morbo of like he starts with a very chill attitude, but then says Morbo's wife hasn't been listening to the cooking advice and that he will destroy her.
And similarly, it's like, what will you be cooking today for Morbo to devour with his mighty jaws?
Yeah.
He's making a nice unnameable horror from beyond with mango chutney.
Yeah, he opens up the like pot of whatever he's cooking and like x-ray vision, like x-rays Morbo's skull.
Yes, doesn't seem healthy, but yeah, so Bender is trying to follow along to make tasty Sunday brunch for my best friends. And he's like, got a chicken carcass and adds like two entire bottles of salt.
Yeah, I wrote this down as, I mean, maybe I just have like a, you know, mind is in the gutter, but perhaps one of the dirtiest jokes of Futurama of Fry walks in and asks Bender if he's building a wife. And he says, well, I'm building part of her. Which sounded like he's building some sort of sex toy. Like,
wow, I didn't think about that. I definitely viewed it as more like you're building a wife that's made of pots and pans because women be cooking. Hilarious.
Okay.
Wow. All right. Right in with how you interpret that scene.
Yeah.
All right. So Fry is going to run off and tell everyone that Bender is cooking. And so they're like, oh, God, we have to run away. But in the middle of that, it's where we get introduced to this bottle subplot.
Yes, a very funny opening of perfect scale model of the universe's largest bottle, and he's put a spaceship inside it so it's not boring.
Yeah, to keep it from being boring. I thought that was really good. And immediately he's like, for the last time, Zoidberg, look with your eyes, like he really wants to play with this bottle.
Yeah.
They are trying to rush out of there. As we've noted, the InfoSphere goofs are always really like pedantic and silly. Sure. And on this one, they're like, they go to leave or whatever, and Bender is blocking the door, and they're like, he's blocking the only exit in the InfoSphere. Is like, he clearly could have just gone around. Like, yeah, there's another way to get to the ship. So funny. Let me read exactly what it said, because I wrote it down. When the crew except Bender is trying to escape, Fry claims Bender is blocking the only escape route, even though there's another one behind them, which leads directly to the ship.
That is a goof.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
Do you understand ships in a bottle is like, I like truly don't understand the hobby. Is it like you meticulously craft the ship by putting like one piece at a time through the opening of the bottle? Like, is that the activity?
I think it's that you build it and then it has some sort of like folding mechanism where you can like slide it into the bottle.
Okay.
And then there's a little string that you pull and it all like opens up into the bottle.
Really?
Okay. I believe so.
I thought it was you build it. I thought it was like Legos, but with like a pair of tweezers that you need to like, you know, do from afar.
Let's see. Building a ship in a bottle from Instructables.com.
Okay.
Let's see. So you build the whole thing, blah, blah, blah. Add the keel and the rudder.
What is your reference point for the string inflatable thing?
I can't remember. I was definitely on TV. Like I watched someone just like pull the little string. Okay, so hold on. Creating the sails and now the magic. You're now committed to inserting the top half of the hull within the next few minutes.
About very time sensitive.
Once the rest of the ship is in the bottle, pull on the control threads and partially raise the mast. You're trying to get them out of the way while you rejoin the two halves of the hull. And then you pull the string the rest of the way.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm looking at the same article. Very interesting. I could see getting into this hobby.
I most strongly associate Ship in a Bottle with this like one episode of Frasier that I can quote. I think I've probably seen like 15 episodes of Frasier, but the one that I remember most distinctly, they are building a ship in a bottle and it's Niles and his father sitting there and he's like, hand me that piece of whatever. And Niles is like, you'll get it at step 16 and not a moment sooner.
Yeah.
And it really reminded me of me.
Classic Niles. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm shocked that didn't spur you to watch all, you know, 150 episodes of Frasier.
I definitely went and bought the DVD box set after that and then just never watched it.
Yeah. Oh, another thing for before we even started the episode, but a new season of Futurama was announced for the summer. Let me find, yes, 12th season will arrive on Hulu Monday, July 29th.
Oh, wow. So, all right. That aligns very closely, I think, with when we would be expected to end this.
Okay. That's interesting. I mean, that last episode of the new season, I definitely felt like was the strongest. So, you know, maybe they're heating up and the new season will be actually good.
Yeah, maybe. We shall see. All right. So the rest of the crew goes to eat brunch and Zoidberg stays behind And the professor's like, for the last time, like, I don't want you touching that. Leave it alone. And he's like, I know. And I thought his delivery, I'm like, I know that, was very good. And then he just like shatters the bottle and breaks the ship.
Yes. He like slithers one of his little mouth tentacles into the bottle and breaks a part of the ship off.
Yeah, the professor will hit me, but if Zoidberg fixes it, then perhaps gifts. he ruins everything. Yeah, and then I guess he's later going to like saunter in nonchalantly, but everything is ruined.
At brunch, we Futurama Wiki is in shambles as Amy is confirmed cute by Bender.
Oh no. True. Yes, exactly. We can't say that. The infosphere mentions the dishes that are prepared for each crew member because he was like, I personalize them. And he's like, oh, because Amy's cute, she gets a pony.
Yes.
Professor Farnsworth gets a human digestive tract. Leela gets a dish with a side of two eyeballs. Hermes' meal is not distinguishable, and Fry's meal is not distinguishable, but looks like a, quote, petrified rack of ribs.
Okay. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Every time anyone says pony, I always think of the Seinfeld.
I had a pony.
I had a pony, which is, again, like, who knows if that actress had many roles, but is the greatest line reading in the history of sitcoms. Like, you know, like, you don't really think about, like, oh, this is like some 65-year-old woman in, like, 19 who delivered like
pony.
an iconic performance that like lives in my head, you know, 35 years later. Truly spectacular.
Yeah, what a career, an icon. So yeah, everyone's trying to get rid of the food. Leela puts her food into the plant and it just instantly dies. The food is unbearable. Bender goes to get them all glasses of mop water, which is very disgusting. And while he's gone, he overhears them saying, like, this food is awful. I don't want to hurt his feelings, but it's terrible and we can't live like this.
Yeah, very sad for Bender. I like the line, this food actually tastes better as vomit.
Very gross line. Leela wants to get her tongue removed.
Yes. Yeah, and then I like that the mop water or concoction, whatever is in there, it like burns through the floor when it falls to the ground.
Yes, very gross.
Manya, the Seinfeld actress, Rosika Helmos, passed away in 1999. 8 acting credits from 1968 to 1991. Seinfeld is her last acting credit. The thing that she did before Seinfeld was 1984, which was called The Best Defense, which has one of the lowest star ratings I've ever seen on IMDb at 3.8. She was an FBI seamstress.
Even worse than Ace Ventura When Nature Calls.
Yes, exactly. So props to Rosika. You know, I really hope she
lives on in our hearts.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So Bender's also going to leave a note, a plea for attention from Bender. I am running away and this time I mean it.
Yes.
And he initially goes to Elzar and Elzar's like, absolutely not. You can't learn to cook with me. I hate you.
Yeah. Bender says, but I watch your show. You owe me, which is a lot of Survivors fans position towards Jeff Probst of like, definitely. But listen to my idea.
You owe me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought Bender looks cute in his little chef hat.
Yeah. Good Bender. Bender's like, when Bender gets his feelings hurt, he becomes not obnoxious and he becomes kind of like cute, sweet Bender a little bit.
Yes. Very lovable. And so he's going to leave because Elzar kicks him out. And back at the office, Zoidberg is like, oh, okay, I'm going to frame Fry. And it looks initially like all he does is write, I hate bottles on Fry's shirt.
Yeah. Two notable things here. I like that he said, what would the robot do? I had not really tracked Zoidberg calling Bender a robot, but that was like one of the things that I remember from my first Futurama run. And again, I hadn't really noticed it outside of this episode. So I wonder if it, you know, becomes more popular for him to, it like becomes a catchphrase in these last couple of seasons.
I don't think so, because he was always like, remember, I'm an expert in humans, not robots, and things like that.
And then the other thing that I noticed was Fry singing I'm Walking on Sunshine, which like becomes more and more his song.
Mm-hmm. And I believe he also sang it in the episode where he's like bathing Zap Brannigan and when they all go to war. So Bender going to Bum Base Alpha, which is the biggest hobo jungle in the quadrant.
Yes. I like the riding the space rails them on the like intergalactic train, that the very clever that the prism is like a rail changing station because all the different lines
a whole bunch of different directions.
Very clever. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's good. And this is where they meet Helmut Spargel, and he used to be the greatest chef ever. And I really liked this, where they were like, the only way to get reservations at his restaurant was to create a parallel universe where you already had reservations.
It's so trendy these days, multiverse.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And so the way that Helmut got there was he used to host a TV show called Down Home Country Kitchen. And the sponsors of the show were like, we need someone younger and more extreme audiences will follow. And that's where Elzar comes in.
Yes. I mean, probably accurate. Just need wackier and wackier reality shows.
Yes, I would agree with that. I thought one thing that was very funny was Elzar coming along and going like, bam, and it deflates the souffle.
That's funny. I did not notice that. I liked it.
Very gentle joke.
Yeah, I like that. Elzar was seduced by the dark side of cooking. There's like a couple of Star Wars references here later on when Bender is like in the montage of training. We get some lightsaber stuff, but
yes. Well, I also really liked what he describes as the dark side of cooking, which is cilantro, mango salsa, and raspberry vinaigrette.
Yeah.
I am personally a cilantro hater, so.
No, tastes like soap.
Indeed, yes. Very much so. Bad. Like, well, as soon as I found out, like, someone put the words to it of, like, it's soap, I was like, oh my god, that's what it is. Yeah. And I've always just been like, what is this god-awful thing that happens?
Man.
Not good. Cam really misses having cilantro in his life.
Yeah. Do you think that's hereditary? Do you pass that on?
My mom also hates it, so.
Okay, so I guess so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Seems like it probably has some, you know, it's like allegedly a gene, right? So it's probably like passed on in some way.
Sure.
So, but yeah, so Sparkle agrees that he's going to teach Bender to cook. And it's basically because Bender was like, I want to do this to get revenge on Elzar.
Yeah. I like the, what's the teacher chef's name?
Helmut Sparkle.
Yes. Helmut Sparkle. Like he says, as for me, I went temporarily insane making pies out of shoes.
Seems like he's a very good cook now, but
yeah.
The thing that I don't get about Bender is like he can't taste anything, but like he should be able to follow directions, I would think.
Yeah, he says I have 8 other senses, but I'd trade them all, even smission, in order to taste.
Yes, we don't get a sense of what the other ones might be, but
yeah,
no taste. And so Sparkle says this is actually a positive because he won't be distracted by taste and he's free to touch the zen of pure flavor and could be the best chef ever.
Yes, like is it Mozart who was deaf?
Beethoven.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a montage here, as you mentioned, like the dark side stuff. He's like peeling potatoes with a lightsaber and it's got the like, you're the best around, which I always think of Arrested Development where they had that song that was like, those balls in the air when they're training Steve Holt.
The rest of them has a lot of good drops. I like Solid Like a Rock. I think that's my favorite.
Yes. Solid as a rock. Yeah, so good. All right. So back at Planet Express, the professor finds the bottle and he's like on the phone and he's like, that's right, Ricardo, a ship in a bottle. And he's like, oh, I guess I could check on it. And then it's destroyed.
Yes. He gathers them in the accusing parlor in a very like Clue / Knives Out vibe of finding out.
I wondered if it was the same room as in the Anthology of Interest where they're accusing people of murdering.
Oh, that'd be a nice little detail.
I agree. Yeah. That they have an accusing parlor is very funny to me. But the clues suggest that it was Fry. He made one fatal mistake, which is leaving a confession note. And it's like from the desk of Dr. Zoidberg.
I don't think those exist anymore.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they accuse Fry and he's like, I don't remember doing any of that, but like, it's probably true. So what do I have to do to make this up to you? And it's like, it's $10. And Zoidberg's like,
yeah, Fry like happily pays it. And Zoidberg is very horrified.
What have I done? Yeah. So Bender has to make a meal that can be eaten and he does manage to do it, but then the meal immediately kills Sparkle. So I'm not sure if he actually passed.
Yeah, his stomach explodes and he says, there goes my life.
It is acceptable.
Yeah, very kind of strange line. I mean, it's funny, but it's a bit convoluted. He says, the man who wishes to be world chess champion must win one game of chess, so must you serve one edible meal. There's a great chess tournament that just started this week of the candidates tournament. Of the format is very interesting. So there's the world champion, so the person who won like the world champion match for, I think the last one was 2022, so 2 years ago, they get like immediate, they get to defend their title. And then there's like a big tournament of 8 other people to figure out who plays in that championship match. Mm-hmm. So it's the candidates tournament and there's 8 people vying for being able to play against the world champion.
Good. I'm sure I'll follow.
Yes.
Incredible. All right. So they say the important thing is that you defeat Elzar. Use this. You cannot fail. And it's like a diamond vial of pure essence of flavor. And it'll cause the whatever essence to bloom forth in any dish.
Yes, I thought of Felix Felicis, the universe breaking substance in the Harry Potter
Good luck
universe.
crap and yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, same idea. And Bender's like, okay, I'm gonna use this to beat Elzar. So he challenges him to a cook-off. He was eating some food I made, and by crazy coincidence, his stomach exploded.
Yeah, I also like that.
Yeah, and it's a good line too from Elzar where Bender's like, I'm here to avenge him. He's like, well, it seems like you killed him.
Yeah, Sparkle has a message for you. He says, oh, I'm dead.
Yeah, so they're going to go on Iron Cook, and Bender says that he can't lose because he's 30% iron, and therein lies the title of the episode.
Yes. Yeah, Lindsay has updated the metadata. Adam, let us know if you see that. Or other in-car listeners who can actually view the metadata.
Yeah, please let us know.
In the middle of recording, like 20 minutes after the earthquake hit, I got my phone sent like the emergency, like,
my God,
you know, unable to silence message being like an earthquake hit. Stay like, inside.
I know.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
Wow, it's really working well.
Yeah, just like we drew it up.
Yeah, we get those here, but you can have it not be super loud if your phone's in Do Not Disturb. But people are always so mad. It'll be like, that Amber Alert woke me up.
Yeah, a couple months ago, there was like a lot of publicity about like, hey, we're sending out the test of like, you know, like true disaster thing. It's just like a test. They sent a lot of like forewarnings of this test happening. I didn't get it. So I think I'm in trouble.
Maybe that's why it took so long to get to you just now.
Yeah, maybe.
Wow. All right. So back to the Iron Cook. They have one secret ingredient that will have to be in every one of their dishes, and it is Soylent Green.
These Simpsons and Futurama writers love Soylent Green.
Love it. Yes. I think especially on Futurama.
Does anyone under 30 know what Soylent Green is?
I kind of doubt it.
Yeah.
Like, I only know about it from other things. Like, I haven't seen the original Soylent Green source material.
No, neither have I. I think I know what it is. I know it's Soylent Green is people, but again, just from Simpsons. Mm-hmm. Is it from something titled Soylent Green?
I think it's called Soylent Green. Yeah, from 1973.
Okay, well, this is another thing that we can task our listeners in with writing it, is ask the people in your life under 25, let's say, if they know what Soylent Green is, and we'll try to get some data. I would guess under 30% know what it is.
Starring Charlton Heston.
Hey, look at that.
Who knew? Hilarious. By 2022. This is set in 2022.
Yes.
Cumulative effects of overpopulation, global warming, and pollution have caused ecocide, leading to severe worldwide shortages of food, water, and housing.
I mean, maybe only like 10 years off. You never know.
You never know. Yeah. Wow.
The water wars are coming.
Wow. So funny. Soylent Green is people. Apparently, that's the very end.
Yeah. Charles, what's his name?
Charlton Heston.
Yeah, he's also Planet of the Apes. They love making this dude scream things that are twists at the end of movies.
True. Yeah, that's his number one job.
Yeah.
Yes. So they note that Bender will be the first robot chef ever to compete in this arena, and he's fighting for the title of Iron Cook. And the celebrity judges are some familiar faces, including Ethan Bubblegum Tate from the we love that one with the time jumps, and Morbo. And then Martha
Stewart's
head. TV anchor
monster Morbo. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Martha Stewart ended a 1,000-year galactic war with her apple dandies.
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there are some problematic accents here, particularly in the reporter who is reporting from the arena, and then also the like host of the show.
Yeah, I clocked the host of the show, which is like very over the top Japanese accent. I suppose it's like not dissimilar from Simpsons, the Homer logo.
True, Mr. Sparkle.
Yes, Mr. Sparkle. It's like the same genre of that, but yeah, it's a little bit over the top.
Yes, and so Elzar obviously does an amazing job. He makes these dishes that all look awesome, a salad that has $100 bills on it. He brings in his signature creation, which is a working pastry replica of downtown Venice.
Yeah, there's like a little creature rowing the gondola in this.
Like a prawn or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is very good. Yeah. I loved this little moment where we cut to the audience where everyone's watching, and Fry sees that they are selling commemorative turkey basters, and he's like, oh my God, amazing, my turkey's dry and I've tried everything. And then he looks at his wallet and doesn't have the $10 that would be needed, and Zoidberg is just racked with guilt.
it is a nice little tie-in to the Zoidberg mm-hmm. plot. And then, yeah, the idea of them selling the turkey basters like it's, you know, baseball stadium pretzels or whatever is very
well,
good.
And also Fry wanting one.
Yeah.
All of his basting needs.
Right.
Yeah. So Bender is doing a terrible job. All his food looks horrible. He's like using a hammer on whatever he's cooking.
Yeah.
And at the very end, he just adds the elixir to it. It all looks terrible. And he just like pours it in Martha Stewart's head's tank at one point. It just makes it look like a swamp. It's awful.
Yeah. But he uses the essence of flavor. And so they end up liking it. Bender using the hammer on his cooking made me think of the classic gif of, it must be like Junior Top Chef or you know, a kid's version of one of these shows. Have you seen the clip of the girl who is running out of time to like put some construction on her cake, and like she's working on it, the clock is counting down, it hits zero and she has to take her hands off, and then the whatever she was putting on top of it just like slowly falls over, and the pain and agony on her face as she's watching this is iconic.
Oh, I haven't seen that, but there are a couple moments in Bake Off, notably when they have to do anything involving like ice cream or mousse or something. Sometimes it'll be too hot and it'll just start melting, and they'll be outside where the judging is going to happen, and then like they just look in through the windows and whatever it is just slowly sliding off their workstation.
Yeah. Here, let me send you this.
Please.
Let's get your reaction to this.
Okay, here we go. Oh no. She does look very sad.
Yeah, she looks very upset.
I thought at first that she was kind of smiling, but it's apparently like a teary grimace.
It's a grimace, yeah. It's...
Oh, no. Yeah, that's very good.
Mm-hmm.
So I really loved the line from Morbo where he's like weeping. It's like, the Challenger's ugly food has shown us that even hideous things can be sweet on the inside. Yes.
Poor Morbo just wants to be understood.
Yes, Bubblegum Tate hugs him. It's a very nice moment.
Mm-hmm.
So Bender wins, and he gives this speech where he's like, my only goal was to humiliate Elzar, and I believe I've done that. He also gives himself the lesser title of Zinc Saucier.
Funny. Yeah, poor Elzar loses despite obviously being better.
Yes, definitely. No question. And Bender also declares that his different title gets him double prize money, and no one seems to push back on that.
Yeah.
Zoidberg also takes this moment to run up on stage and declare that he broke the bottled ship, and I love that everyone in the audience gasps.
Yeah. So this is what I was talking about. I was like pre-writing in my notes of Zoidberg confesses and nobody cares, but it turns out Zoidberg confesses, everyone cares, and he tries to kill himself, which
ends up breaking the sword from the host, and that was valued at $5,000. So things are much worse, and now he blames Fry again. But,
yes.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is where it goes like one step too far.
Yeah.
And so back at Planet Express, I thought this was really funny because it like cuts away from it and Bender goes like, and that's how I defeated Elzar. And they're like, we know, like we just watched it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were there. And also we just watched it again on TV.
Yeah.
And the professor reveals he does like a test on the elixir and it's made of water. And they're like, oh my God, it turns out the secret ingredient was confidence. And it's like, no, actually it was laced with LSD.
Yes.
I had no memory of this. I thought it was just like some mystery flavor thing.
Interesting.
But yeah, so that's the end of the episode. I have a bunch of notes here from the InfoSphere that I did not scale back. So let me just see if there's anything
good. Okay, please. Yeah.
Okay, so Helmut Spargel is a German-based name. Helmut is a traditional German name. But the surname Spargel comes from Spargel, which means... hilarious. Spargel comes from the German word Spargel, which means asparagus.
Okay.
So that's good. Yes. Commonly grown in Germany and is one of the most popular vegetables there.
I mean, honestly, great German accent. I looked up who did the voice on this, and it's the guy that does the professor. And great German accent. Like, I truly looked it up to see, like, oh, did they get Werner Herzog? Which, again, this is, like, probably very very naive of me to be like, oh, it's a German accent. It must be Werner Herzog. But it sounds great.
I'm looking again at the stupid thing about the escape route, and someone responded and said, in fact, it sometimes occurs whenever required by the script. The layout of the second floor of Planet Express has changed considerably.
Yeah.
So sometimes.
Sometimes a goof is present.
Yes. Also, the spectrum that emerges from the prism is oriented along the wrong axis, which is acknowledged in the DVD commentary.
Okay. That's good. I do think if we ever wanted to pivot to a different show, I do think DVD commentary recaps of Simpsons episodes would be interesting, because it's like, we've seen those, like, it's fun to rewatch the classic episodes, and then I haven't seen the DVD commentaries enough to really know them by heart. And so there might be some nuggets in there.
Yes, I thought you meant we would do a commentary. I was like, isn't that what we're doing right now?
I think, yeah, well, we would do a commentary on the DVD commentary.
On the commentary, right. Yes, yeah. Got it. Yeah. Yes. All right, and let's see, is there anything else? That's all. I guess it's just maybe the most pedantic one yet, so I should probably read it. The writing utensil that comes out of Bender's finger when he writes his note looks like a fountain pen, yet when he checks off the boxes on the paper, it produces a rubbery squeak like a marker. Fountain pens produce scratching sounds.
That is accurate. Get that fully eye fired.
Devastating. Anyway, that's fine. Who were the winners and losers this week?
Loser, I guess, is Elzar. He gets humiliated and gets beaten by Bender. Zoidberg tries to kill himself and is in debt by the end of it. I don't know which one's worse. I mean, Elzar seems to bounce back fine. We know that it doesn't really matter.
He just has to wash a lot of dishes.
Right. Anyone else?
I think that's right.
Contenders. Yeah. The winner, Bender. Wins double double the prize money.
Yeah, exactly. Zinc Saucier.
Yeah.
And then next week's episode, Alex, is called Where No Fan Has Gone Before, and it is the season 4 finale.
Wow. Okay. I'm guessing this is, or I hope that this is some sort of Star Trek convention, William Shatner guest star, maybe Leonard Nimoy guest star. You know, this is where no man has gone before.
Mm-hmm.
But fan, or maybe we're at a convention type thing, so. Yeah, hoping that's what this is.
Yes, I will give you a spoiler on this. Looking at the guest star list, it includes such folks as William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy and Alicia Kay. So,
all right.
Yes.
Are you a Star Trek fan? What Star Trek background do you have?
So my father was very into the original series. Cam is really into Next Generation. So I have like some awareness of both, but not a lot of awareness of either.
Yeah, I've watched kind of like the best of Next Generation, and the best of is very, very good.
I'm looking at the plot summary on the Futurama Wiki, and this one has like maybe the most comprehensive plot summary I've ever seen. So
nice.
That's something.
Yeah. Our notes are done for us.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing. How can people get in touch with us if they would like to point out any privacy violations or similar?
Yes, please. Yeah, give us feedback about our metadata at podoftomorrow@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter/X @podoftomorrow. Maybe investigate the bots metadata if you can find out where they're coming from. That'd be nice. Yeah, I think that's it. What's new with you? Any Toucan Birdie?
Yeah, no, we released the series finale of Toucan Birdie last week.
Nice.
So pretty sure that is over unless we can get like one last episode in, but pretty sure that's it. So go check it out. I think I mentioned in last week's episode that I re-released the entire first season of BoJack because it was not available to people for some reason, but now it is. So you can go check that out on BoJack Horsepod.
We should do that with Pod of Tomorrow in some, or not Pod of Tomorrow, with Simpsons Then and Now in some capacity. Because when I tell people that I do podcasts, I usually tell them about the Simpsons stuff and not this stuff, since this is such a negative cesspool of apathy.
Yeah. True. We should release the best ones, but not the first 10, because that's not good. That was our learning opportunity. So yeah, great. All right. Well, with that, we will see you next week for Where No Fan Has Gone Before.
Bye.